If we can hold your attention for a minute, Jimmy's broken a string, a guitar string, and before we go on, we have to fix the guitar string. We're going to feature tonight a couple of numbers from the album Led Zeppelin on the Atlantic label. I don't know whether you've heard it. And we hope to carry on with a thing from Otis Rush.
Thank you, everybody, for joining me. My name is Mark McFall. This is episode 18 of the Zep Fan All Things Led Zeppelin podcast. I feel like diving right into it today. So real quick, if you need to reach out to me, contact@zepfan.com. That's it. Let's go. Hit it. Director Peter Michael Dowd felt the story of Akio Sakurai had to be told. Sakurai's story is dedicated to honoring Jimmy Page. For 30 years, he recreated Led Zeppelin concerts note for note in small Tokyo clubs until the day the real Jimmy Page stopped by one night and his life changed forever. Inspired by Mr. Page's ovation, he quits his day job, leaving behind his family to move to Los Angeles and join the tribute band Led Zeppelin. Soon, cultures clashed in the band and Sakurai's serene vision of America is quickly met with reality. That is until Jason Bonham calls and invites him to join the band, the Led Zeppelin Evening Tour. With that captivating story, Peter Michael Dowd took on the role as director, producer, and editor and set out to make this documentary, Mr. Jimmy. Peter is joining us today to discuss this unique film. Peter, it's an honor. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you today?
I'm good, man. The honor is mine. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, very cool. I'm excited to talk about this movie. And I've noticed you're getting a lot of great press. That must be really exciting as well. That's always a plus when you put out a movie, I imagine.
It is. I mean, especially eight years in on this. This one is a real labor of love. So it's not, it's my first feature. I hope they all don't take 8 years, but, you know, if they do, they do, I guess. But 8 years is... like I said, a true labor of love, and to finally have it out and people seem to be really into it and excited to see it in theaters, especially.
Right.
It's really cool.
Yeah. I watched a lot of this unfold through social media because I've always kind of followed Led Zeppelin and just, you know, always pops up on the feed. And of course, I love Mr. Jimmy. I don't play any instruments, but I think he's spot on when you see someone play like that. It blows me away. I know I've heard all the bootlegs and just the way he does note for note, and to actually see the story from social media. And then I'm watching the movie the other night and I'm like, oh wow, yeah, I remember all this. And they're talking about the drummer and all that stuff. It's like, it's kind of cool because you finally hear the backstory of it. Yeah, I found the story very fascinating, as I mentioned. So while there are tons of tribute bands out there, you know, most of them do not warrant a documentary, right? But someone like Akio Sakurai takes it to the next level. And when I say next level, we're not talking one level. We're talking level. So anyone who sees this movie is going to be like, okay, I get sure. It. So talk a little bit. What could convince you that this is a story that needed to be told? I mean, how did this all originate 8 years ago?
Yeah, so it really, it's funny. I can picture it. It was one night. I got a text from a pal saying, Hey, Peter, he knew I was a big Zeppelin fan. He said, hey, Peter, I just saw a Led Zeppelin tribute band in Boston that wasn't total shit. I think that's what he said verbatim. And it wasn't even Akio Sakurai, but it was just, he said it was a pretty good tribute band. And it got my mind going about, what is a tribute band? What right. is this thing? And, you know, it's kind of like one thing to try to do a painting like Van Gogh, but then what if you also dress like Van Gogh? What if you also cut your ear off? What if you try to live like them? I thought that's kind of interesting. And so I started looking at all these tribute bands on YouTube. I went down a real rabbit hole there. Right. And I was pretty amused. I mean, every band out there has somebody trying to be them, and I can't imagine what it's like for the artists. But after a while, I ultimately thought, it's not in me to make a movie where I'm just taking the piss out of somebody. So most right. of the bands I saw, God bless them, they just weren't that good. So I just thought, yeah, maybe this is a bad idea. I don't want to make a film if it's tongue-in-cheek, poking fun at somebody, if it's really not a top-level appreciation of their talent. And then all of a sudden, I saw this clip. I think it was just labeled Rain Song 1979 version. Click on it. And I mean, instantly, I recognized, wait a minute, he's got the blue button-down shirt, he's got the white linen pants, he's got the black loafers. He tracked down every garment of Page's August 79 outfit. And you know, I mean, Nebworth is, you got to be a little deep as a fan to know Nebworth, appreciate Nebworth, and know the costume head to toe. Because I'm thinking every, there's so many guys out there with a bad rendition of a dragon suit. But this was spot on. Tailored clothes for Nebworth look. And then I'm like, this is wild. But more importantly, I turn my ears on and listen. And he is so bang on in the 79 arrangement and tone of the Rain song that I started to get chills. And then the way he was moving, holding his body, and then he's playing something with the Les Paul with the yellow strap that Page had at Nebworth. And I'm like, all these details. And then I click on something from 1970. He's got a fake beard. I'll add
right.
1970. 77, he's got the white dragon suit. 75, Earl's Court, he's got the black dragon suit. All the outfits, plus the most important thing is the music. He was playing it so spot on, the live arrangements with incredible fidelity. And then the performance. I was like, this guy's a virtuoso musician himself.
Right.
He's a musical historian, the way he's approaching it. And he's like a method actor. I mean, I just thought, this is wild. And I almost just reacted emotionally, like, I love this. Right. I don't know what this is all about. It's a little bit mad, but it's also awesome. I totally love it. And I just didn't even think. I just found his website, which was totally in Japanese. And I just sent a message saying, really don't know exactly what your story is, but I think it might be a very interesting one. And I might be a good person to tell it because I'm really, I recognize all these details as a fan. And his wife wrote back and said, you're a lucky guy because he's just moved to LA to join Zep again.
Wow, right.
So at that point, I thought, oh, this is like a sign.
To be told, yep.
But then saying that, I still thought, well, maybe it would be, how deep can we go with this? Would it be a short or a feature? So I said, let me film one show and interview him and go from there. And I said, come in, bring a guitar, play your favorite Zeppelin song. And he brings in his guitar. He plays the Rain song. I'm getting chills because it feels like I'm inside the record. It was wild. And he finishes, and I'm like, oh, my God, that was so beautiful. And I just say, well, how long did it take you to figure out that song? It's an innovative tuning. It's very tricky. Yeah. A lot of people can struggle figuring out how to play it. And he looks at me and goes, about 35 years.
And I'm like, still working on it, right?
I'm like, that's crazy. And then he's like, what are you laughing for? And I was like, whoa. And he's like, I still listen to the recording, and maybe – one adjustment a year. I might adjust one finger position a year or one note a year, and I'm still fine-tuning it after 35 years of study. And I was like, oh, this might be a feature. So that was the moment when I was like, this is really deep. And then once I went to Japan and saw his work on the pickups, on the amplifiers with Mr. Suzuki, figuring out how much solder to put on a capacitor to get, you know, the 73 tone. I was just like, this is just beyond. This is really, if I wanted to treat it to show how much work he put in, I was like, I would like to spend the time of a feature, because it also is highly reflective of, well, how much time and how much evolution went into Mr. Page's sound. So, it's not just pick up a guitar and play the notes. You know, it's really finding your tone, developing your tone, you know, and digging into, of course, what Akio has done over now 35, 40 years of work on this thing. So, yeah, that's when I knew, okay, this is kind of going to be a deep ride.
When I got the documentary, and that's when I first heard about it, that's what I'm thinking too. Cause yeah, it is a tribute band. I know how great he is and what direction are you going to take it? And you mentioned the capacitors, and I remember watching the film, and within about 10, 15 minutes in, you're like, oh, I get it now. Cause he's talking about these 1950 capacitors and soldering them. It's like, it's just mind blowing how much detail that goes into it. And to actually play every, you know, play this year and that year, and, you know, to know every arrangement, it just, it's like you said, he's an artist, an actor, he's just everything rolled up into one. So what, I mean, what is your Zeppelin background? Because I think to really respect what he does, you do need to know Led Zeppelin. You need to know the bootlegs. I mean, so what's your story in Led Zeppelin and what got you started into the band?
Yeah, I'm a maniac. I don't know. I probably have 300-ish bootlegs in my collection. Yeah, I fell in love with Zeppelin. I think I was a freshman in high school. A senior used to drive me to high school, and he would usually play some pretty, no offense if you like Winger, but pretty shitty music, like Winger and whatever else was early 90s stuff. And I would kind of tune it out. And then one day I remember he grabbed this white cassette, put it in, and the riff to Whole Lot of Love started. And I mean, it was as seminal a fucking memory as my first sexual experience.
Right.
Like, I was just like, the riff just took over my brain, and I was just like, what is this? This is like fucking some Beethoven shit. And it was just like, yo, what's happening right now? And then once the drums come in and then Plant's vocals over the top, I'm like, whoa. And then so I'm vibing on this riff, and it was like the most conscious I've ever been of the construction of a song. I remember as soon as they go into the bridge, I was thinking like, oh my God. I remember I had this thought clear as day. I said, oh my God, this band created the most perfect riff in the history of rock and roll. They created this thing, and any other band would cling to this riff and then never let it go.
1,000 times over. Yep.
And in the bridge, they take this riff and like throw it away. And all of a sudden you've got tabla going, a fucking theremin, Robert Plant's having an orgasm. Like, right. What? And I was like, this is it. This is like experimental shit all of a sudden. And then Bonham comes back in with the drums, insane page solo, back to the riff, orgasmic experience. So I'm thinking, whoa. And I asked, what the hell is this? Oh, this is Zeppelin 2. I'm like, I need like all of this. I need all this stuff. And then one by one, I mean, what's awesome about back in the day, you know, you had to save up to buy the record. You had to save up to do one by one by one, what record should I get next? And eventually I got into Song Remains the Same, the movie, the soundtrack. And at first I was like, this might be too deep for me. What's going on? This is like so far beyond the studio records. But then I really got into it. And then, yeah, growing up in Boston, I remember I would go down to Harvard Square and there was a record shop there. It wasn't In Your Ear. It's another record. I was trying to think of the name of the record shop. I can't remember. But they would have bootlegs and they would be, I don't know what, 30, 40, 50 bucks. Yeah. So I couldn't afford to. I would like AB them. I would drive them insane because I'd be like, oh, can I listen to that? Listen to this Eddie again. And I really want to compare that to like Blueberry Hill. And I don't know, man. And I would like for weeks until I finally had 40 bucks and would be like, all right, man, I'm going to go for Destroyer or whatever it was. Like, I, you know, and then where my buddy, we would team up. I'll get New Orleans 73. You get Destroyer. We'll make tapes for each other, trade.
Hey, yep.
And then just one by one, you know, started building up the live stuff. And then when I was, when was this? Going into college, Page Plant reunited around that time. And I remember I saw Page Plant at Boston Garden, one of the last shows ever at Boston Garden. My buddy and I, we were first in line at Tower Records on Newbury Street, got interviewed by WBCN. I think we were first in line by a margin of like 5 hours because we didn't realize that the first like 100 people that line up, they were going to do this stupid thing with wristbands and random numbers. And
yeah,
it was a waste of time to get there like 10 hours earlier than anyone else. But we didn't give a fuck. We were really proud that we were first in line.
Right. Dedication. You know?
Yeah. And when Paige came out on stage at Boston Garden, and I think it was 95, yep, like, I remember I could just see like his cigarette in the dark. And I mean, I lost my shit.
Give me, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because at that point I had never seen him live stage. So I flipped out. And anyway, and then 98 tour was insane for me. Cause by then, I mean, Paige's chops were so fierce. The No Quarter solo live in 98. How many more times live in 98? I mean, that stuff was insane, mind-boggling. So anyway, I've got a pretty deep collection of bootlegs and other stuff and have a real passion for it. And I just thought when Mr. Jimmy came along, when Akio came along, I was like, wow, this is like, if I could have been around in 73 or something and making a documentary on Page and on Zeppelin on tour, like it's a little bit of a fantasy camp experience of that, of, well, right, at least I can film this Japanese guy digging into it. And but anyway, yeah, I'm not a poser. Like, I'm not like some guy who like really digs Stairway or something like that. Right. And like, yeah, I'll just make this Zeppelin movie. Like, I'm a complete maniac as well.
Right. And to see, to appreciate Mr. Jimmy, you have to understand those bootlegs too, because he could definitely replicate the albums, no problem. But just the way he does, I mean, the Whiskey A Go-Go shows he does from that 69 sound, he's just so dialed into it.
I think what's cool about that though is like, you know, it again always brings you back to the original, and it makes you really appreciate, like, wow, Jimmy Page was like just constantly pushing it, you know, constantly pushing his tone, trying something new. The whole band was pushing it. I mean, a 75 show versus a 69 show, totally different vibes. The gear, the stage presence, the everything. I mean, a wild evolution and this really bold commitment to change and to just push it. And that's, I think, what's been awesome about it too, is like digging into what was, how awesome Page's sound was in 69, and then, you know, his sound on a high watt versus a Marshall, and this evolution, and then of course just the general beauty of the live improvisation. Like, who else has the balls to go out there and really improvise, really go off a cliff? Like, it's pretty great.
But Led Zeppelin albums are the same thing, right? Everyone has different texture. I mean, for me as a fan, dedicated fan to Led Zeppelin, when I listen to any album, House of the Holy or Physical, you know, my mind thought is more of what they were doing at the time too. Because just like their live material, the albums have that same texture. They're all different. Yeah. You know, you can see how they're just exploring it and pushing it, and they just move onwards. Working with Akio, what were some of your takeaways after you met him and just seeing him play? What's some of the stuff that really blew you away about him?
I mean, I guess I just, at first, I always thought, I mean, you know, all right, he's done this a lot and for a lot of years. So am I going to ever catch him playing Stairway to Heaven half-ass or going through the motions? But that guy, it is like, every time he's up on stage, it's Christmas morning or something like that. Like, he, his love for it is so pure, and it's inspiring to me as an artist, because it's just like, he's holding on to that magical inspiration of whenever you were 14 or 15 and you got Song Remains the Same on for the first time, and you're playing air guitar to the No Quarter live, you know, jam. And he is still in that state of rapture and exploration. Right. And, it's awesome. And he's just so committed to just trying to do things correctly and to really pay homage properly to this music that really is the classical music of our time. And, you know, it was inspiring to me and our small crew. We kind of, after our first day or two filming with Akio, we were like, you know, we have to meet his level. Right. We have to, whatever it takes, we have to multi-track these shows. We have to film this as artfully as we can. We have to do right by him as he's doing right by Jimmy Page. We have to always do right by the music. And it really was inspiring to keep our level high. And it was incredible to see his work ethic and his mind working on the details always.
It's not just the playing, like we talked about earlier, it's the costumes too. They're so detailed. And then he's even detailed the light structure too. And I think when he does the Network show, he has that special lighting on the side or something. It just looks fantastic. And you see these pictures, and a lot of them are the publicity shots you have. And, you know, just the lighting and the way they capture them, it really just blows you away on how accurate it really is.
Yeah, we just did, you know, for this edition of the film, you know, for our 2023 release, we just went through and did one more pass on sound mix and one more pass on color correction. And I was looking at the stuff on stage of that theater in Tokyo, and I was like, it is just the fact that they brought in all those hot lights is such a, it, that's the vibe. You can't do that shit with these modern LED
right.
It's, and like, it just captured, and they had the original pyro cues at that show, which is like wild. And
yeah, I remember seeing that.
All that stuff. But yeah, I mean, and it goes to show you that I think part of Jimmy Page's genius is on stage and the concept of a stage show. And I mean, the thing is also thinking back to nowadays, you go to a show and the video screens are, I don't even know, like at SoFi are like the size of a football field or something. Back then, like, how? Okay, so you have 40,000 people at Tampa and you have no video screen. So you have to, make your show somehow visually compelling. How do you do that? And even beyond that, I just think part of Zeppelin's power is their iconic power, the iconography of Jimmy Page. And I think that's why like his book of his sort of photographic autobiography is so cool, because it's like all it's intertwined, the music, the stage performance, the presence, the look, the costume. It was in essence a character on stage.
Yeah, always telling a story.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I don't know what's like the Wings song. Paul McCartney has those lines about like Jimmy Page looks like a relic from a different age, because it's just part of the magic. It's just right. Something different, and certainly, I mean, doing theremin and stuff like that. There's something remarkable.
Not everybody could pull that off, right? Yeah, yeah. It's like Jimmy just looks so cool doing it.
And I think you are conjuring something there.
Right.
And I think that's really, again, and the look, you know, that's why I do think 99% of these cover bands or whatever they are, it's not up to snuff, because the real thing is pretty magical. And
yeah.
It's all connected. The look, your stage presence, obviously number one is the music and the playing. All that stuff has to be world class, otherwise you're not going to be close to the level. So,
right. Well, speaking of the music and doing this documentary, obviously the biggest or the most important thing would be having the rights to play Led Zeppelin in your movie. Is there something involved in doing that? Can you just put out a movie and have him play Zeppelin? Or there's a lot of stuff you have to go through, right? What is that process like?
And well, I guess when I started, in a way, I was fortunate that I was a blissful idiot to all things legal and all that stuff.
Sometimes it helps.
Yeah, because I was just like this naive do-gooder or something, or schmuck or something. But I just thought, I don't know, I'm just going to act in good faith and hopefully this will work out. But no, I waited with bated breath before our South by Southwest premiere to hear either thumbs up or thumbs down. And a thumbs down would have been quite sad, because it would have meant that the movie was on my shelf and maybe I show it to my grandmother every Christmas or something like that. That's it. No, I mean, that's the biggest, to me, that's something that I'm eternally grateful to the artists for, to Jimmy Page, Plant, John Paul Jones, the estate of John Bonham, for somehow having such respect for Keo and his hard work, and hopefully appreciating the way that we handled the music and made the film, to give us the permission to allow us to use him, you know, performing their songs. I mean, that is, to my knowledge, unprecedented, and it's unbelievable. So, that's absolutely awesome. And that's, sometimes I think like, okay, well, what if they had just said like, oh, this is like very cute, but you know, no thanks. I'd be like, would have been tough to blow 4 years of your life like that. But you know, it's all worked out, and I do think it's really the greatest affirmation of his hard work.
Right. Well, you mentioned this taking 8 years to do. What? Why the long process in it? I mean, I think from a story standpoint, it worked out good when you started, because all the things that Jimmy went through. But why did it take so long to get this wrapped up?
Well, so it's funny. I mean, originally I thought I might film him for about a year and a half. I don't know. Documentary, you never know. And then I originally thought the ending of the movie would be when he goes to Tokyo with Led Zepp again, because I kind of thought, oh, that might wrap it up in a nice bow. East meets West, some friction. Yeah. Let's work it out. We all love this music together. We make a great show. And after the concert, I was like, hey, Jimmy, I think Akio, I think it all went great. Let's might be a wrap. I don't know. It was really great. And he said, well, I really wasn't happy with this detail and that detail and this detail. And I was like, wait, what? And he's like, I think I'm going to leave this band and start my own band that will be higher level. And I thought, oh boy, either am I in on this ride or out? And I thought, well, things might get hairy. It might get interesting. So I'm going to stick with it. I didn't necessarily expect that to go another 2 or 3 years, but it did.
Right.
But then the story got a lot more interesting. You know, you see him struggle with his dream and struggle with trying to deal with the reality of, you know, just building a band. You know, you're not Led Zeppelin, and you have to just book shows like an upstart band and prove yourself and deal with, I don't know, booking agents and all this stuff. So it the film got so much deeper, and then the ultimate payoff of having Jason Bonham like call.
Right.
That came really out of the blue and was a lifesaver, probably literally, for Keo, and was so beautiful. The payoff, you know, that was year 4 of filming. So that was, we were all invested. I mean, our small crew, like when he got that and we were down there in Australia and we're on this little boat and he's talking about how his father could never take a plane. He never left Japan. And wow, now I'm in Australia. I'm playing this music. I'm playing with the Jason Bonham. Like, we all cried. Like, it was a pretty sad little scene, but we were just so happy for him because no one had ever worked for anything more than that. Anyway, so then the film premiered at South by Southwest, and then there was COVID, and it was like a whole thing. And then it just took a long time to, in addition to the Led Zeppelin music, there's John Lee Hooker, there's Muddy Waters, there's a song by Dmitri Shostakovich that, for whatever reason, the rights holder on that wanted to be paid 4 times what Led Zeppelin was getting. That like took a year just to get that one song. So for good reason, because I have ultimate respect for the artist. Right. Music rights are very complicated, and I'm like a one-man band with a very patient music supervisor, and I just didn't want to compromise any of the music. So to get it all sorted and all legal and all cleared for whatever we call this, commercial release and theatrical release, it just took time. It just took time. But now, after 8 years, I'm really proud of a movie that I told the story I want to tell, the way I want to tell it at a high level. And in addition to these amazing compositions by Led Zeppelin, you know, you've got Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Otis Rush, Elvis Presley, The Miracles, Shostakovich. I mean, it's packed with really high-level music. Link Wray. I mean, probably for good reason. If this was produced by some company, they never would, like, have this much
great. I peep into it, right? Like, it, yeah, so, that means, I mean, a lot, though, the music.
Yeah, I mean, good thing I don't have any kids, because the college fund is but it's all worth it.
What do you want the audience to take away from this movie? Who's this movie geared to, and what do you want them to take away from it?
For me, this movie is for the music lovers and for Led Zeppelin lovers and blues lovers, and I think it's I, going into it, you know, hey, I have 300 bootlegs and this and that. Right. I thought I knew, like, Jimmy Page inside and out. I was constantly, like, stunned at, oh, man, wow, I didn't realize he was on a high lot here. And, wow, listen to the tone of the evolution from 69 to 70. And, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, peeling the onion might be a cheesy, but right. Just revealing the layers. And also, I really wanted to make, I hate music documentaries that talk about, oh man, this music is great, this record is great, like, wow, there was nothing like it. I just want you to fucking be immersed in it
and feel it,
and just you're gonna, please go see it in a theater with a great 5-1 setup, so that when we reach that climax at the Whiskey and he's doing the epic live How Many More Times solo,
right,
it just washes over you, and you can really catch the vibe of how powerful this music is. I just want people to be taken with the power of the music and to really appreciate craft.
Yeah,
I think that's the craft of the plane, that's the craft of Mr. Page's original compositions, the craft of his brilliance and laying it down in the studio, the stage magic of performing it live, and Akio and now his army of Japanese craftsmen and women, just to try to capture 50% of that, all of that.
Well, that was one of my biggest takeaways from the movie. That, as I mentioned, when I first, the first 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, okay, I see what direction it is. Cause yeah, it's definitely about the music, but there's so much more involved in seeing all these people that work with him, the seamstress, and seeing her, like the way he's just changed, like, oh, I don't want this green around the leaf. I want it to be a silver. And she just has this look like, okay, like I'll do that. Yeah. And just, and the close-ups of the outfits are just beautiful. I mean, I've seen other tribute bands and they do have them, and some are better than others, but that, when you look up close, it really is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I think, it's like what separates him from, you know, he's in his own class. I don't know. I think he started referring to his band as a revival band, not a tribute band. And I think that's nice, because tribute band, I think, just at this point has this kind of cheesy connotation. But, you know, it's like, in all seriousness, I think, what do we call Yo-Yo Ma? You know, someone who is dedicating themselves to performing the work of the masters. And I think that Akio is doing that, only he's also taking on trying to recreate some of the stage magic. Because, you know, unlike Bach, we do have, you know, great movie footage of Jimmy Page
yes.
doing his thing. And that's part of it. And it's for, I think, for an audience, when Akio is doing his thing live, it harkens back to the original and that magic of the live experience on stage, the danger of the improvisation, and just that singular stage presence that Jimmy Page has.
I know you have a lot of premieres coming up at the beginning of September. I'm going to be at the one I'm probably going to go to the one in San Rafael. So you guys are going to be up there?
Oh. Yeah. We're going to be there for that one.
Okay, cool. I'll see you up there. What's next? I mean, where, after the premiere comes out, I mean, are we going to see it on streaming? Is it going to be more a larger theatrical release? What's next?
Yeah, so this is all kind of pretty organic. I mean, we're putting it out in theaters. If somebody out there, hey, why doesn't it come into my hometown? Please call your call your local theater. I need some Mr. Jimmy in my life, and maybe we can book it. I'm hopeful that, you know, we play a lot of theaters. We get some great reviews. And then wherever movies wind up, it winds up on Netflix, Hulu, whatever it is, iTunes, some kind of DVD, for sure. For now, we're fully focused on, like, let's let people rock out in a theater with fellow
good sound
music. Yep. Yeah, and really just experience it in that immersive way. Because me, when I'm at home watching a movie, I'm cursed by, like, this thing, like, doing stuff. And I mean, I'm a music nut. I don't even have a 5-1 set up at home. Same. So I think go to your local theater, tell them, make sure they have it set at a Dolby 7.0 on the volume, and you should be rocked into oblivion and have a really good time. But yeah, hopefully we do theaters. I know they're, again, it's pretty organic. So they're like adding them maybe every week. So hopefully we have a nice run there, and then it winds up on all the other stuff.
And is he playing a show up in San Rafael as well the day before?
Did I read that? He's playing at Sweetwater the night before. So if you want to make a weekend of it, go see the band. Mm. Right now they're focused on recreating MSG 73, so it'll be that show. He does the full 26-minute Dazed and Confused, which is wild. And I really think that Jimmy Page singled out like appreciation for that, because to think of the time it took to figure out 26, there's so many notes in that. And then the bowing, I mean, all the facets of to figure out all the bowing stuff, I mean, it's just wild.
Well, I think that was in the movie too, or just on YouTube, when he met Jimmy. And Jimmy even said, oh, you got all the parts right, or you got everything, or you played the 1970 version. He must have got chills when he heard Jimmy say that, because that must have been an honor to play in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, we went to that little club, you know.
Oh, okay.
And to recreate, to like revisit. And I was like, I got nervous just thinking, because the club was in Tokyo, and everything's pretty tight quarters. So it was like a 30 or 40 person club. And Paige was sitting, I mean, I don't know, 20 feet from him. I mean, I was like, I feel nervous just thinking about you having to do this in front of him that close. And if you watch the video, like, he actually crushes it. And yeah. I'm sure there's no way. I'm sure Mr. Paige, and he was there with his friend Ross Halfen. I'm sure when they walked in, it's like, wow, there's four Japanese guys on stage, like wearing you and your friend's pants from 1973. Like, it is kooky.
Yeah, why we're.
But once he starts playing and they go into the live arrangements and the tone is so spot on and the playing is so lively and great, like you can see Paige really getting into it, tapping along. And I think absolutely it was that 26-minute Dazed and Confused that like really topped it off.
Right. I think that's what every guitarist likes. No singing, just someone just jamming for 26 minutes. That's ideal. Well, Peter, thanks again for joining me. I always like to end my show by asking a question and get a one-word answer from you. So let me ask you some questions and you could kind of give me your answer on this. Favorite Led Zeppelin album?
Presence.
Nice. Favorite Led Zeppelin song?
Achilles Last Stand.
Okay. Jimmy Page or Robert Plant fan?
Oh, Jimmy Page. No, I love Robert Plant too. No, right.
Should they have continued after the O2 show?
I mean, as a fan, obviously I'm going to say yes. I'm dying to see that.
Right.
However, if it isn't in them, if Robert Plant didn't want to do it or whatever it was, then I go by what, you know, if it isn't there, it isn't there. So I guess I'll say no because they didn't.
Your favorite live bootleg gear?
I just have a thing for 73. I love the introduction of No Quarter into the set. I think it just opened up a whole other range of color into the show.
Yeah. And I think we're all embedded with the song remains the same, watching that so many times. It's in our DNA. The last bootleg you listened to?
Copenhagen 79. Vastly underrated.
Yeah. What was the first bootleg you listened to?
The first one I bought was New Orleans 73. I remember that. What's that one called? Something in the Butter Queen.
Oh, May in the Butter Queen?
Something funny.
The May Queen in the... Wait. No, I should know this, but yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
But yeah, it's a pretty funky soundboard recording. The communication breakdown on there is so funky and dirty. And I think a precursor of the stuff they laid down, the new tracks they laid down for Physical Graffiti. But that was the first one that I bought.
Well, and I think that's what's so dynamic about when they play. You can listen to a bootleg from night to night, and it's completely different. The way they go into the, you know, drums, and or the way they go into the guitar, and Jimmy will approach the solo differently. They just, you know, to quote Dave Lewis in his wonderful magazine, Type of Loose, that's exactly how they play. Yeah. Just however it felt good, they went for it.
So. Yeah, I mean, the danger is something that I think artists could learn from in general. Like, I think it's like, you know, it should be an organic living thing that the performance, if the performance isn't on the edge of going off the rails, or if it isn't exciting to the performer in the moment, like, what's the point? Like, I just love that. I mean, but at the same time, you have to be really good to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think all four of those, and I think that's a great analogy too, because that's exactly how they play. There's some nights when they went over. But those nights when they're all dead on, I mean, it was magical. What was the last Led Zeppelin song you listened to or you heard? What?
I feel like I was just rocking out to Into. I've been on the later stuff lately. So I guess I'm going to say I'm going to crawl.
That's a good song. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Peter. Any last words for our listeners?
I just want to say thank you. I know we've been getting a lot of questions online. When's this movie coming out? When's this movie coming out? Trust me, I have been working on it so hard all these years, just trying to make it happen. And if you could come out and buy a movie ticket and rock out, I hope you're entertained. And I'm really grateful for everyone's support, encouragement. Thanks for hanging in there with me. This has just been me, a labor of love, my love for the music, my respect for what Akio's done. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity. So thank you.
Okay. Plug the website so they can see times and show times and all that. Can't forget that.
Yeah, please go to MrJimmyMovie.com and it kind of will refresh maybe every week. So look for when it's coming to your town. And again, yeah, if your local cinema isn't playing it, call them, tell them I need some Mr. Jimmy in my life.
Very good. Well, thanks, Peter. I look forward to seeing you. I think it's September 10th. You're playing up in San Rafael. So I'll see you then. Cool, man.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. All right. Thanks again, Peter, for joining me, sharing your love for Led Zeppelin and bringing this incredible documentary on Mr. Jimmy. And again, that website is MrJimmyMovie.com. Go in there. You get signed up on the update list. There's a list of all the show times coming up as well and what areas. So definitely recommend it. And as he also said, you could go to your local theater and request Mr. Jimmy Movie. I want to crank out some Led Zeppelin 3 tonight. How about we do some Friends? Have a good one, everyone.